This session is on loss and grief, and it's not just about loss through relationships through death, but it's also taking a look at all losses that we go through in life. We have an hour to be together, and what I would like to do is to uplift some ideas of all kinds of losses that we go through that we don't even sometimes recognize are, that can add to our grief experiences in life, and then take a look at also loss through death and the different kinds of emotions that we go through because of that and the whole process of grief. Loss and grief continues to be an interest of mine simply because it seems like there are so many changes that go on in my life, and I'm sure also in your life as well. I want to start out with a little story, and that story is about when I was 4 years old, and my dad is a real gentle person, and he is the kind of man that never ever disciplined us. That was always my mother's job. But anyway, when I was four, he was making a corn crib, and he was laying the cement for that corn crib. And I thought, as a four-year-old child, that it would be fun to put my handprint in that corn crib and in the cement. And so I did. And I remember in his frustration of that hot July day, he gave me a little pat on the butt and sent me up to the house. And I was in such shock because he never was a disciplinarian. And I remember crying and running up to the house and being real distraught about that incident. But anyway, so that's that story, and I'll come back to it in a minute. A couple years ago, I went back to that old farmstead where I grew up, and there was a bachelor living there on that farm, and so I asked him if I could just sort of look through the house and go down to the barn and, you know, just check out the orchard and see if it was the same. And so I went down to the barn first, and in the barn, he had this beautiful feeding, the way to feed silage on this beautiful track that we never had when we were kids. My dad did that all by hand. And he had a new barn cleaner, and so all of that was changed, and he had added on to the barn as well with new stalls. I was feeling like my old barn from childhood had disappeared, and I was sad about that. And then I went out into the orchard where our old swing used to be, and that huge, huge oak tree had been cut down. Went out into the lilac bush near the northwest side of the house, and we used to take that lilac bush. It was so huge. We had different rooms in the lilac bush. It was sort of our little hideaway. And that had all grown over. We didn't have a little living room and a kitchen anymore in the lilac bush. It was just a bush. And then I went into the house, and in the house, there were new kitchen cupboards, and we went upstairs to my bedroom, and there was new wallpaper, of course. And the house didn't even smell like it used to when I was a child. But the most significant feeling of emptiness I had was when I went into the living room, and the living room, which was a real place of family warmth, especially during Christmas time, a place where there was a soft couch and a radiator, and it was a place of comfort for me. And there in the middle of the living room was this huge, gigantic pool table. And it felt real offensive to me. And I thought, this whole farm has changed. So then I went down to that corn crib that my dad was building when I was four. And the sides of the corn crib had disappeared, but there was that cement foundation with my handprint in it. Mm-hmm. And there was some security about that, feeling like at least that hasn't changed. It was a symbol of stability for me. I think that in our lives, we continually look for stability, things that are not going to change in our places of living, in our relationships, even in our special moments. We want to hang on to them and keep them as our own. And the reality of life, though, the harsh reality, as we all know, is that those things always change. So life is change. A special relationship that we may have now, there is no guarantee that we will have that tomorrow. A special moment that we have now, even though we want to cling to it, cling to the beauty of those trees out there this afternoon, even that the sun continues to turn, or we continue to turn. How is it? Does the earth or the sun turn? But anyway, that changes, that moment changes, that magical time changes. And with that comes loss, and with loss comes grief. And so we are in this continual cycle of change in life, and so it seems to me that we are in a continual cycle of grief. Now, that is not to say that we don't also have blessings along the way, because we have that too. But I think it's important for us to recognize the fact that we have these losses as well. If you look at your own life, I would suggest to you that there are four different kinds of losses that we go through. And one is developmental loss that we have just by developing in life. If you think of a small baby that is being pushed out of the birth canal and suddenly has to breathe on its own and is no longer surrounded by the comfort of the womb and is burst out into the bright lights and has to now find its food, and it cries, and probably because that's one of the most significant losses that we go through, from our mother's womb to finally being this individual. And then as that little baby starts to grow and needs to go off to nursery school and is under peer pressure, he leaves his little pacifier and his teddy bear at home and experiences that little loss as he faces his peers in nursery school. And then he starts to grow up to become a teenager, and the first Christmas that he gets a sweater instead of toys, he experiences another kind of loss in his heart. As he tries on new roles in life and tries to separate from his parents in a new way, not only does he experience losses in becoming an older person, but also his parents are going through some losses. They no longer have this little boy, but they're starting to have a young adult. You know, I see that with my sister as her son comes back. They get into this, is he a little boy or is he an adult? Because of a change of role. And then we, as a child, perhaps leave our homes and go off to college, and now this young adult, she chooses to live away from her parents, and so she has to, for the first time, realizes that if she's hungry, she has to find some money and feed herself, and she is not always going to have what she needs because she's off on her own. So new ways of being, which create new losses. And then she falls in love, perhaps, becomes connected to a significant other, and although that's a major gain, she can't be as independent as she was before. She's connected to another person. And so with that gain also comes loss. And let's say he or she has children. With children, it's a blessing, but also significant loss in your lifestyle. And as that child then grows up and leaves the nest, another loss. And as we grow older, we start losing our eyesight. When you first get your first pair of glasses after you haven't had any for 40 years, it's a loss. We start losing some of our hair, some of our hearing. And as we grow older, perhaps we end up in a nursing home and can lose our privilege of writing checks. We can lose our independence. We can lose our driver's license. And ultimately, then we die. So these are developmental losses that we go through all of our life. And we can wake up one day and feel depressed and not quite figure out what it is that we're depressed about. And maybe it is simply that we are feeling some of these natural developmental losses. The second kind of loss, I think, is material loss. And for those of us here at Holden who many of us who claim not to be too materialistic, material loss may not seem very significant, but if you can remember, perhaps when you were 4 years old and you had your first ice cream cone out in the sun, and you tilted it a little bit too much, and it plopped down onto the ground, and you weren't able to get another one, it's a loss, and you cried, and nobody really could fix that for you. I mean, the ice cream cone was gone. I remember a fire engine that I had as a child, and I loved that fire engine, and we could pedal it around and around and around the house. And when I was about 5, my folks decided that I was too old for it, and so they gave it to my cousin Joey. And that was my favorite toy, and to this day, I still want to find that fire engine. Material loss. Valuable possessions. It doesn't even have to be worth a lot of money, but if someone who has loved you, who has given you a precious gift, a ring or a picture or a book, and you find yourself losing that, it's a loss. I knew a family whose house burned down, and it wasn't the house so much that they missed, but it was the photographs that burned down with the house. That's the second kind of loss I see. And the third kind is loss of self. And the best way I can kind of draw this out here is to see ourselves as a huge pie with different slices. And each, this is an oversimplification of persons, but it's a way to get my point across. We are complicated people, and we're made up of many different parts. And we have, of course, our physical body, and I'm left-handed today, so we have our emotions. What else makes us up? As you think about us as people.
Memories,
very good. What else?
Dreams,
really. And what else?
Hopes.
Yeah, let's keep that with there, so I don't have to write it again. Dreams, hopes.
Spirit,
right. Should we say spirituality? Or that's different. That's different. Spirit. Let's say spirituality here. Whoops. And what else? I think I'm dyslexic as I write.
Sort of goes with body, but sort of our knowledge or skills.
Skills, right. Okay, sure. And our profession, how about that? That's part of who we are. If we've got so much more that makes us up, but let's just stop with that. If you think, let's take our body for example. If you think about your body 10 years ago, has it changed? Has it gone through any changes? Yeah. I mean, I realized that again today as I went hiking, and I can't do it as fast anymore. Has our eyesight changed? Yes, there are parts of our bodies that change. If you think about your dreams that you had when you graduated from high school, have those dreams gone through any changes? The goal that you set for yourself after high school, yes. I mean, and where you find yourself now, you've probably gone through changes. Spirit, I don't know if this ever changes. That may be one thing that doesn't. I'm not sure about that. But spirituality, for sure. If you think about your spirituality 20 years ago, let's say, has that changed? Yeah. And with that change, of course, comes gifts. I mean, if we got stuck in our spirituality and never continued to move and grow and bloom, we would be very stagnant. But it changes. And with that, even though the old spirituality perhaps was not feeding us, still today, when I walk back into my old Missouri Synod church, there's a feeling of loss in my heart, just because it's a connection to my childhood, to safety or something. Even though it has all that dogma and all of that, still I feel that pain inside. Professionally, some of us have had 1, 2, 3 professions, or losing jobs, or so this stuff changes. So if you think about yourself now as compared to how you were 10 years ago, for example, you see we go through losses, our self-losses. And then the fourth kind of loss is relationship loss. As I see it, anyway, this is how I've kind of neatly categorized it. But relationship loss through moving. When you moved out here to Holden, you probably went through some relationship loss. Now you can continue to write letters to people back home, but it's not going to be the same ever. There's going to be change probably that's going to happen in your relationship. And that doesn't mean that it's necessarily negative. The change may be positive, but nevertheless, there is change. What was old will not be the same again. So through moving or through divorce, for example, you also, of course, have relationship loss, which is sometimes tricky to try to figure out how to be with that loss, because that person is still alive and around, and how can you be? How can you be in a new way with that person? Or, for example, I know a couple, and an older couple, and he got Alzheimer's disease when he was about 60 years old, and so all of a sudden, she has this new person that she's living with and having to take care of, and relationship loss because of the disease. And then ultimately, a very, very difficult loss is that through death. And there's kind of no going back on that one. So those are the losses that we continually are faced with throughout our lives. And yes, Roger.
What do you call the third type of loss? What do you call
loss of self. Yeah. In looking at all of these losses that we... Now, let me stop for a second. Do you have any comments, or can you identify with this at all, or can you think of maybe another category? You know, even when I had this skiing accident, I couldn't... The next 2 days, I felt really depressed, and I, you know, it was like no big deal. You go get a cast on, you wait for it to heal, but it was, I felt teary, and I thought, what on earth, what is wrong? And it's sort of, I think something that happens to your body, you start realizing, hey, you know, I could have broken my neck, or I can't write for 2 weeks, and how am I going to do writing and sermons and stuff without my right hand? And when I realized, hey, you know, this is a significant body trauma and therefore loss, then I reminded myself again, it's okay to be teary about that. Okay, then let's take a look at, does this thing have an eraser? Well, maybe we won't even need to use it. I want to talk about. I think my opinion is that bereavement is the most difficult thing that we have to go through in life. Now, so far in my life, that's been my experience anyway. I could be wrong on that. Dying might be worse, but I don't know. I've never died yet. But I think bereavement is really, really hard. And I venture to say that average bereavement takes about at least 2 years to kind of start feeling like you're back to your normal self again. And the problem in our culture is that we think that you should be over it at least within a month, and then you should get on with your life. So it's hard for grieving people in our culture. And I think that as grievers, we should almost wear something to prove that we're grieving so that people know that we're hurting, because in order for us to survive, we kind of have to keep at the job and keep working and performing. But loss is difficult. It is very, very difficult. And if you think of your own most significant loss that you've had, perhaps you can identify with some of these emotions. But let's say that you've had someone who has died that you have loved, and it's very normal for the first thing is to go through some sort of denial, and I want to say also shock. I think the two sort of go hand in hand. The first thing you say when you get the phone call is, no, that can't be true. I can't believe that my father, who has always been with me, is now dead. My dad is not dead. I'm just using that as an example, but it's like it's too awful to even think about. And so there's some sort of a numbing thing that happens to us, which is a gift, I think, from the Holy Spirit or something, that is like Novocaine, and it keeps us sort of going on automatic for a while. And that's why I think we can even make it through funerals. We're just sort of numb. And it seems to me usually in about 3 weeks after that initial shock, that's when the hurt starts to settle in. It's like when Novocaine starts to wear off, you start to really feel the pain. And then the way I see grief is not in nice, neat stages after that. I mean, there's some people who have done work in grief who see the grieving process as you're done with this stage, and then you move on to the next stage, and then you're done with that, and you go on to the next stage. And that has not been my experience with my own grief, and nor does it seem to be with others that I have listened to and been with in their grief. To me, grief is this mass of emotions that kind of all flow in and out at once, and you can be angry and sad and anxious all at the same time, and then you think that you may be over that, and then you'll be going along just fine, and then all of a sudden you'll hear a song on the radio and you'll be right back into it again. And I see it as sort of this mishmash of emotions for a while and on your way to healing. There are a variety of things that you can feel all at once in grief. And I just want to put some of these up here. For those of you that have been in grief, what are some of these feelings that you recognize?
Confusion.
Confusion?
Yeah.
Really.
Anger. Bobby, would you like me to write?
Yes.
Thank you. It's really hard to watch you trying to do.
Thanks. Great.
I'm not a very good speller.
Neither am I, so we don't need to worry about that. Confusion, it's like, especially at first, I think you don't know what you should do first. You seem to be sort of unorganized. You start one project and you can't seem to finish it, and then you start another one, and it is, that's just really true. Anger is a great one. Angry at the doctor for not doing enough, anger at the pastor for not visiting, anger at someone on the highway that is not moving fast enough, anger at maybe even the person that has died. You know, how could she do this to me? I mean, why did she leave me? anger, and in the presence of a grieving person, that anger is very, very present often. And for those of us that want to be with grievers, to not take that personally, I think, is real helpful. Anger is, yeah. Okay, what else?
Guilt,
indeed. You know, I wish I would have told him that I loved him more. I wish I would have written that last letter. I wish I would have made him go to the doctor. I wish that I would have driven her there, and then she wouldn't have been killed in the car accident. And somehow, the guilt, I think, is connected to our need to control, or thinking that we have control. Because if we can feel guilty about it, somehow that says to us that life isn't chaotic, that if I would have been there, she wouldn't have died. And the reality is that some of this stuff we really don't have any control over. We really don't. But I believe that that's where the feeling of guilt comes from. Okay?
Anxiety,
good one. You know, we're afraid, but we really don't know what we're afraid of. We can't name the monster. Working with parents who have lost children oftentimes have heightened anxiety about perhaps losing another child. Or widows, I've heard stories from widows saying, you know, I come home and I lock all the doors, and then I go around and make sure that they're locked again, and I'll even look under the bed. I mean, anxiety of fear of, you know, something bad in the cosmic forces made my person that I love die, then something else bad can happen too. Anxiety. And along with that, then let's put fear. Fear is a more focused fear of God, perhaps. Now, who is God? What's God doing that for? Seeing God as a punisher or a monster or fear of eternal life. Some people have that fear. Fear that you're going to lose other people that you love. What else?
Sadness.
Yeah, you just want to sit down and cry and cry and cry and cry. It is plain sadness.
Feeling a betrayal?
Yes. There's, you know, when that person dies and it's like they have left us, we take it personally. It's like, how can they do this to us? It's all this abandonment stuff. What else?
Exhaustion or lethargy.
Yeah, just really tired. This is really true. Sleeping later, you get up, you don't even feel like doing the dishes in the sink, just let them sit there. And along with that, I think, comes depression. You want to put that in there too. Just physically, it drains a person to be in grief. It is truly draining. It just takes your whole spirit. It can. And depression, feeling apathetic about your work, about other relationships. Good. What else?
I think emptiness, sort of the hole that, you know, the person's there, sort of the physical presence and sort of the emptiness that leaves.
Yes. Yep. If someone has been suffering for a long time and you don't want to see them suffer anymore, it's like, I am relieved that they finally died. And it may be difficult to admit that to the rest of your family or to your friends. Or perhaps he was a jerk, and you know, and you finally have freedom now that he's out of your life, and it's really difficult to admit that too. So then you feel guilty about feeling relieved, but relief can be a real normal part of loss. Other things that you can think of, yes?
I'm not sure what you'd call this, but I was thinking of a situation of a friend who
he and his wife had a very difficult relationship, and we're on the planning to get a divorce, and she flew to Mexico and was killed in an airplane accident as she was landing. And he just flipped over so that she was perfect and there was nothing wrong with the relationship, and couldn't, for several years, could not acknowledge the reality that in reality she had mistreated him and had done a lot of damage. But she was just glorified at that point.
Yes, yeah, and that's, I think that's pretty normal too. And even usually it's more difficult to go through the through the grief process if the relationship has been rocky, because there's all kinds of unresolved stuff. And to glorify someone who has died is really common. It's real common. And I'm not sure why we do that, but that's to glorify them.
I have some relationship with the sense of guilt in my mind.
What?
It might have some relationship even with a sense of guilt.
Yes, maybe.
Feeling guilty over it. And then.
I was going to say out of control.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really. And that is why I think it's so hard, because it's like, this was not in my plan. You know, wow, this person one day is alive and here and breathing, and the next they're gone. And it's like frightening. It can be frightening. Also, a major change, I think, that happens is a change in our spirituality. And I would say usually people in loss and grief, their spirituality changes. Either they feel closer to God, and I hear stories of people saying, I don't know what I would have done without God in my life during this time, or they go to the other extreme and feel further away from God. But I do think that there's a definite change in spirituality for a while. C.S. Lewis, and he wrote A Grief Observed, which was one of the most helpful books for me to read in grief. He said, you know, you go to God and you don't need God, and you know, God is listening and very present. But as soon as you need God, as in loss of someone that you have loved, and you pray hard to God, all you hear is a door slammed in your face, and the bolts being locked and double locked, and then there's silence. And so there is that experience too in grief, where people feel abandoned by God.
That's a good one, abandonment,
right?
Because not just the spirituality part, but I think it also can be the friends that we have, whether they in essence or in reality abandon us, or it just appears that we are so alone in our grieving process.
And the reality is that we really are alone as far as being connected to other people. No one else can really know what it is that you're going through except you yourself. And we can have hints of it. We've all been through grief, and we all know what our own grief experience is like. But each individual and each relationship is so unique, you don't know what the other person is feeling. But God, for those of us that want to sometimes protect God, and we hear a griever say, well, if God is so great, you know, where is God right now? I think it is our responsibility to not try to protect God and say, God loves you and God is with you, if that person is not feeling that. You can open up the Bible and you can see places in the Psalms where it says, you know, why have you forsaken me? I mean, Jesus himself said that. And if it's good enough for Jesus to feel abandoned by God, it is good enough for grievers. It is good enough for us too, I think. Psalm 88 is one that is one of the most depressing psalms in the Bible, but it has been helpful for people who are really in the pits in their grief to hear that psalm that offers no hope because it's like, oh, somebody understands. There's somebody in the Bible that has the same kind of feelings that I do. When I first experienced a deep grief and somebody got the Bible out for me and read Psalm 23, it just didn't do it for me. In fact, I was irritated. Not irritated, I was... That's soft, that's too soft of a word. But it was like, I don't need a psalm that does not embrace my feelings. That's not helpful. Okay, another thing that also happens in this mishmash of feelings is it's not uncommon at all for people to see the person that has died or to feel their presence or to smell them even. I've heard story after story after story of people coming back in dreams or people sitting up in bed and seeing the person there. And I have also gone through this myself, so it has been my experience working in hospice and being close to someone who was dying. And when she finally died that night, I had a dream that she was weak, but she was okay. She was finally well. And when I went to work the next day, I knew that she was dead before I even, you know, checked it out at the nursing station. But so it's like these people come to us at times. I've heard a widow told me, she said, I opened up my linen closet and there in the linens I saw his face. You know, we see these people. Or you may find yourself looking for this person for the rest of your life. You're driving down the street and all of a sudden you see on the other side someone who has the same long, flowing brown hair, someone with the same walk, the same physique, and it's like you want to follow that person. You just want to look at them. This is a part of grief that continues to stay with us. Anyway, all of this stuff, these confused emotions that come in and out and flow along our way towards healing, this can go on for 5, 9 months, a year, 2 years, and even after that. But I think the most intense time for grief is from the 5th to the 9th month. And it's helpful for us, I think, as healers to remember this when someone is going through grief, to really be present with them between the 5th and the 9th month. And I'm not sure why that is. But that it's like the rest of society thinks that you should be healed and you should be on with it, but it's like that's when the reality really starts to sink in. And sometimes that period of time can be more difficult than immediately, the first month after. The first month after, you're still getting lots and lots of love and cards and all of that. By 9 months later, when it's Christmas time and you start to feel it, the reality sink in, it's difficult. That is a difficult time of grieving. Anniversaries are a difficult time, birthdays, holidays, and so on. Before we talk about healing, let me stop and see if you have any comments or observations of your own.
I was thinking about sort of in times past, even in different cultures, where people, you know, were given like a year, during, you know, to grieve, and they wore black, and it was more understood that this person is in grief, and I think we've lost that in our society and in our culture.
I do too. And in the Jewish tradition, they've got something going for them. When the first 7 days is, what is it called?
Shiva.
Thank you. And you go and you sit and be with the person, and you're not supposed to speak to them until they speak to you. And you just sit there and you acknowledge the fact that they are grieving for 7 days. And then there's, and you bring them food, you take care of their physical needs, which is great because if you don't have the energy to take care of yourself physically sometimes. And then there's a... They continue to acknowledge 6 months later and a year later. And it would be great. I mean, the idea of wearing black, I think, made some sense because it said to everybody else, this person is really hurting. And we need to be gentle with them.
One word that didn't get up there, and it goes more, well, I think it goes with different kinds of grief, but I think often in grief that doesn't include a death, that feeling of helplessness, that you can't fix it. That somehow it's something's been taken away from you and you no longer, yeah, you have control, sort of that you know, you are helpless to change circumstances.
Indeed. You know, now this kind of emotional stuff happens in a big way when you lose major relationships, but you can also feel little touches of each one of these two through these other losses that I've talked about. You know, you can one day wake up feeling just angry. You start to think about all the stuff that you're leaving behind, and it can just make you peeved, you know, or anxious, or any of that stuff. I think it is related to loss in our lives. But it comes up like a monster at when we are going through major, major grief. And it can feel like you're having a nervous breakdown or something. It can feel like you're going crazy. But grief is not crazy, but it can feel like that. As far as, I just want to touch on healing here before we close. And my image of healing continues to change, and I'm not sure that I have it figured out yet. But I see it. I'm beginning to see healing as an image, and I think that when you experience a loss through death, for example, that is deep and it's wide. The wound is very wide and deep. And as you continue to heal through time and through the grace of God, the wound sort of starts to close and close. And then, but I still see it as always being that deep. I think it goes deep into our hearts and stays there. But the wound closes so that you're not as obsessed about it as you were when it first happens. Maybe when I went through, what?
I was going to say maybe even the scar.
Scar, yeah, yeah.
An obsession, too, is a word that we can put up.
Yes, yeah. Sometimes, when I went through major grief 11 or so years ago, it felt like I thought I would never be the same again. I thought I would be in hopeless despair for the rest of my life. And it was awful. And I wish somebody would have just told me, no, you won't always be in hopeless despair. I don't know if I would have believed them. I wish I would have known that, though. And I thought, it will always be like this now, but it's not, you know? But I have changed. It has been a life-changing experience. I have changed. I am not the old person. I have gained some wisdom. I have gained some deep sadness. I have also gotten joy back, and I thought it would never, never come back, but it has come back. And so I believe, I'm a believer in the healing process, and I'm not exactly sure how all of that happens, and I think some of it happens simply by the grace of God as we go through time. As a person in grief, I think that one thing that we can do for ourselves for the healing process is to deliberately be intentional about taking care of ourselves physically, to be disciplined about good physical care, enough sleep, good food, body massage once in a while, exercise, and to be very disciplined about that because it drains our entire body. And then grief is a funny thing. It's like this cloud that is going to be there. And we have a choice of trying to run away from the cloud by becoming really busy or by doing a lot of work or by becoming involved in other relationships or whatever it is, whatever our favorite addiction might be. We can try to run away from this cloud that is hanging there. And not sitting down and saying, hey, you know, I'm really depressed, and it's okay to be depressed, and by golly, today is going to be my day for sitting here and just grieving and crying. But we have all kinds of ways that we try to run away from this black cloud. And I think it's healthier to turn around and to dive smack dab in the middle of it rather than trying to deny it, trying to push it away, trying to keep a stiff upper lip, because what grief does, it doesn't go away, it hangs in our souls until we have decided to enter into it. Now, this is my opinion. On the other hand, I want to put a PS to this. I know that sometimes it is so painful that we cannot totally dive headlong into it, that we do need to be busy for a while because it is so painful, and that we do need to not cry right now. We need to think about it later. So I'm giving you a paradox here. I'm being wishy-washy. It's kind of a fine line. As far as healing, I think it's very, very helpful to find someone who will listen to you, someone that you can talk and talk and talk and talk about this person with, to uplift the memories of that person. It's really odd, I think, to sit down at Christmas Eve dinner and not even mention Grandpa, even though he just died 9 months ago. But some families do this. They think by not mentioning him, it will help the healing process. And in fact, I think it delays the healing process. To be able to uplift him, to be able to say, I miss him, I have loved him, and I remember when he did such and such for me. Drugs and alcohol, I think, are very dangerous in grief. And to stay away from that as much as possible is a real healthy thing to do. It just, again, postpones a healthy grieving process. For those of us that want to take care of someone in grief, it's important to remember that we cannot take their grief upon us. Their grief is not our grief. And if I feel total agony for someone else, there's going to be two people miserable instead of one person. And that is not to say that you can't be empathetic, but if you take someone else's grief on, it is not going to fix theirs. On the other hand, it is good to be there, to listen, and to help uplift the memories. To be a minister, a caregiver to someone in grief, is more of a being process than a doing process. To be available to them when they need to talk. There's not a lot that we can do, I don't think, physically do. And that's real frustrating for us in our culture because we're such doers. Anything else that you can think of that has helped you in the grief process or that you have discovered that...
I've got one warning.
Okay.
For people who are dealing with people who are in grief, don't ask the question, how are you doing, unless you are willing to take the time to listen to the answer. Because the answer may be, I'm doing fine today, or it may be, I'm doing poorly today, and that person may want to spend the next 45 minutes talking. Mm-hmm. If you don't have 45 minutes to give that person, that has hurt the healing process.
Other comments or observations about yourself and grief and what was helpful or not helpful for healing?
Just sort of, when my father died about 11 years ago, the thing that astonished me was how well our church, it's like everybody knew what to do. I mean, he died about 6 in the morning, and by 8 the house was full of people. There was so much food, we had to put it on the back porch to keep it cold, because we couldn't refrigerate it all. And for days, the house was full of people. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, through that time of not knowing if you could laugh again, all of a sudden something gets hysterical funny over breakfast and everybody's laughing until they cry. You know, things, it was really amazing because up until then, I had had several friends who'd lost people, and I had no idea what to do. I was so afraid. And the response I got from many of my closest friends that was really hard was that they didn't know what to do, and they stayed away. And it was, I wasn't at a place where I could say, you don't have to do anything except be with me, because being alone is really hard right now. And I think that that's the thing that was most helpful, were those people who, for whatever reason, knew that all they needed to do was be
just
there.
Be there.
Yeah, and that was really helpful. And I learned a lot from that, how to just be there for other people. And that was a good one.
I was thinking just the realities of the situation. I was thinking of when, you know, both of my parents died and Scott's parents died. Just the sharing that goes on as a family and the treasures of that. I mean, there's tears, there's laughter, there's, you know, remembering, being willing to remember the fun times or the crazy things that happened. Or, you know, I mean, those are really special things. I mean, we learn things from, as brothers and sisters, that we didn't know, you know, and that's a real treasure. Something no one expected at that.
It's such that is so healing to get those pictures out or to talk about the person that has died again and again and again and again.
Especially
on
holidays.
Yes. Mark?
Well, I'm still in the grieving process about supporting my parents in the last 2 years. So cry. I have to tell myself that it's okay, that I have all the time I need, and this is a very hard place to be in grief. And where I hold my family and my friends know that I'm free. But here, it's just, I mean, I don't know about people knowing my friends at home. And so, Charles and Annie have away my parents, who are alone, but we do talk a lot. My mom and dad. And all of those things that are on the board is very people right now. And you think you get through one stage and then you go back and you go back.
Yeah.
It's just been a real long haul for me.
And it is not only difficult to lose one person that you love, but when you lose two within a very short period of time, it's a double whammy. And then to be with people where you don't have a history with them, it can be really, really isolating. It's true. It's like you don't know who to grieve first, you know? Who are you sad for today? I don't know. I've never lost my parents yet, and I sure don't look forward to that. And I don't know what it would be like, and I don't want them ever to die. and I know that they will.
The most wonderful thing, though, for my mother, she came to my house on Friday. I went to get her on Friday night. She had a cold or something, and I took her to emergency. It seemed to work out okay for her. And that night before I left her, she left my house with my sister coming to take her back home. I told her I loved her. And she said to me that you're absolutely the best dog in the world. And I went through not a lot of the guilt, because I know I had done everything I possibly could have done for her. And as my father too. So the guilt stage, I don't have a lot of that other than, you know, wanting my cat to stay in my house. Mm. But I really honestly believe that was her time. And I also put it also is up there is that the Thanksgiving that I was able to pray, that she didn't suffer.
Mm-hmm.
She went quickly. That my father was sick for a couple of years. But none of the family members ever gave up on him. Not that we needed to make it better, but we were always there at the nursing home for him. And we took care of him. And we did what we could do, the best we could. So the guilt was not there, but everything else is there. Just kind of bombards me.
You know, to lose a parent is to lose a significant love source in our life. You know, we sort of have this guarantee of love flowing from people like that, and to know that love source is gone